Season's greetings, everyone. You have tuned into Paradigm Shifters. My name is Veronica Entwistle. And like many of you, I'm often looking for, say, spiritual or consciousness-oriented children's books. And today I've got an amazing one to talk about. This one's called Milton's Secret, and it's co-written with Eckhart Tolle. Robert Friedman is our guest, and he's the fellow who wrote the text, but he's using Eckhart Tolle's inspiration, cooperation. Together they put this amazing book together. What is wonderful about it is it's teaching children, perhaps age 4 to 8, it's teaching them a lot about entering the now. About Eckhart Tolle, I've been looking at some of his YouTubes and reading bits and pieces of his book in preparation for this show. And it's so wonderful. I know a lot of you know a lot more about him than I do. But he was talking about the power of now, which we know. And his new book, The New Earth, Awakening to Your Life's Purpose, has just really skittered right through our consciousness, thanks to Oprah and other major proponents of his work. And I was listening to a YouTube, it was so great, he was talking about, for example, consciousness is about moving beyond the pain body or where your mind wants to go because it's addicted to go there. It gets all worked up and all juiced up and so on. So he says when, he was chuckling when he said it, he said in one YouTube was, if you have mental noise, you're trying to meditate, say, okay, there it is. Here's my mental noise, and just be with it. Because as he says, when you go into the now, when you're right in the moment with whatever's going on, your consciousness grows. You have an expansion and a power that you don't normally have, or that you don't have when you're unconscious about centering in the now. He keeps saying great expansion is possible. And then another thing that I thought was pretty interesting is I have a pet peeve about all the violence that's being poured at us. And he was talking about the pain body. I think a lot of you know he talks about the pain body, which is kind of an energy body, which is a recording, really, or a storage tank of some amazing drama that we've had. It's where we hold our grievances, where we hold all the past things that happened to us, and so on. But he's always talking about stepping out of the pain body and not fueling it. And I like this thing that I was reading, that tabloids and so on will actually excite us and ignite us as we hear, you know, the latest, whether Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt are going to stay together, or if they're screaming at each other in public, or if Oprah's over 200 pounds, or everybody gets kind of charged up because it echoes, it really fuels the pain body. And that keeps our consciousness reduced. At this time in history, our species is undergoing a tremendous change, and that could be perhaps, we could say that that change is going to come through our awakening to how we can empower ourselves way beyond what the pain body or our reactive body wants to go through over and over again. Anyway, he's talking a bit in his new book about violence in the media, and how some of it just directly feeds the pain body. But he also said something interesting, which is that, for example, if you have a very realistic war story that really depicts the difficulty and dangers of it, it actually can educate our emotions to want to choose differently and move beyond it. So sometimes the violence is very effective in terms of our evolution. So don't run from it all, but begin to observe when you're being literally sucked in or you're being educated. So my guest today was very influenced by Eckhart Tolle's book, The Power of Now, and he also is a publisher, so he's meeting him from that perspective as well. And I'll let him talk for himself, but he wrote the text. Robert S. Friedman wrote the text for this wonderful children's book called Milton's Secret. And it's a terrific book. If you've got, I know it's a bit late for gifts for this time of year, but if you have anybody on your Christmas list or your gift list who is between 4 and 8 years old and you really want to help install some of the consciousness in their thinking, it's a just an amazing book where you experience the journey of Milton meeting the school bully and how that can fuel his pain body and limit him and keep him smaller. And what do they do about it? And how his dreams lead him out, and how he learns the power of now, or the power of finding the light within himself and a detachment from the big neighborhood bully. So I'm going to introduce you, the writer of this book, Milton's Secret, and a cohort of Eckhart Tolle, a wonderful man who knows a fair amount about books, literature, what's going on in the world today, and whether or not it reflects a shifting consciousness in our world. Welcome to the show, Bob Friedman of Hampton Roads Publishing, but also the co-author of Milton's Secret, co with Eckhart Tolle. So welcome to the show.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
And we're glad to have you here. I was telling you earlier that there are so many people that are talking to me, and I'm an intuitive, but also do a fair amount of radio and so on, talking to me about how frustrating it is to try to get material that the kids will enjoy and really respond to, because so many kids are being assaulted by media stuff, as you know. What's popular, what isn't necessarily very invigorating as far as our personal growth. And I think Milton's Secret is really an exciting book. Where did the inspiration come from for you?
Well, it came from The Power of Now, which was Eckhart Tolle's first book, which I think was published in 1998. Or perhaps sooner, I can't remember exactly. But I had read that book and thought it was really powerful, and I just happened to meet the publisher of the book, Constance Kello, who runs a small company in Vancouver, Canada, which is where Eckhart lives.
Hmm.
It's called Namaste Publishing.
Hmm. That's where I'm from, actually.
But she was not a publisher when he first met her. I think she was just in a class or something, and he went up to her and said, "You're going to publish my book." And she said, "But I don't know anything about publishing." He said, "I don't care. You're going to publish my book. I just know it." And so she decided to take the leap, and fortunately she was married to someone who was a well-known tax attorney in Canada, and I guess had the funds to do it, so she published it under Namaste Publishing.
Hmm.
And managed to get it into a few bookstores, and, you know, it started to sell by word of mouth, and it was about almost probably a year before even a distributor would pick it up.
Wow.
And then she eventually sold it to New World Library in California, which published it on the U.S. market, and I think you sold about 2 million copies originally when it first came out. Anyway, I met Constance at a book expo convention.
So you were already a publisher by then?
Well, yes. Hampton Roads has been around since 1989.
Hmm.
And we both had awards, you know, books up for awards, and we were at a dinner, and we just happened to be sitting next to each other. You know how these coincidences happen.
Of course.
So we met and we talked, and it wasn't until, I think, about a year later I had the idea to take the teachings in The Power of Now and try to put them at a level where children could understand them. And I asked her about that, and she thought, it was an excellent idea, and Eckhart had always wanted to do that, but he couldn't write children's books, so he thought it was a good idea to try. So we decided to co-publish Namaste and Hampton Roads, and then we were going to find a writer to do the story, and Eckhart, of course, would then put his own magic on it and do whatever he liked to it. And I started to think, you know, if I get a writer that's already published in the children's area, there might be some ego problems here, because Eckhart is the one who's going to have final approval. of whatever goes into that book.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided to try it myself. I'd written, earlier in life, I'd done a bit of writing and actually have an MFA in writing.
Oh, really? Good. What have you written? Bunches of novels?
Well, short stories, poetry, that kind of thing. But I got diverted into life.
Like most of us, right?
You know how.
But I noticed you have four children, so that would give you a little
experience.
Yeah,
that was one of the big conversions. You had to make a living.
Mm-hmm.
And as my mother used to say, right on the side. Be a doctor, be a lawyer, right on the side. And, it's very difficult to do that, as a lot of people know. So I went into publishing in 1974, and I've been involved in it ever since. And so anyway, to make a long story short, I wrote the spine of the story, and then it went back and forth for months with Eckhart and Constance, and we finally finalized it. Took about a year, I think, before it was really finished.
Yeah, it's so interesting that we talk so much these days about, besides the power of now, also about love and fear, and it's really all there is, and to move from one to the other is a really important metaphysical step or spiritual step, and this little boy certainly does that in this book. I love that part. I like the whole story, actually.
The story is about living in the now, which is what obviously the power of now is about. And Eckhart discovered that the now was the only place for peace and happiness. And if you live in the past or worry about the future, you're robbed of your peace in the now and you're robbed of your happiness.
Mm.
So that whole book is about how to access your higher self, which is the now, and to get beyond the ego.
And I don't know how old the little boy is. The little boy's name is Carter. He's a delightful boy. But is he like...
Carter was the bully. Milton is...
Oh, Milton, boy. I'm sorry. Yeah.
And he's 8.
Mm-hmm.
Or thereabouts. We never did put an exact age on him because we wanted it to be available for anybody from 4 to 80. But he's roughly, in our minds, he was, 7 or 8 in the second or third grade.
And as we all remember, it was, it's pretty easy to be terrorized when you're a small person at school, isn't it?
I think a lot of people go through that, mm-hmm. both physically and, even verbally.
Mm-hmm.
I think some women have told me that, the bullying among women or children is more verbal than physical, but there's a lot of it among young girls.
Mm-hmm.
And young boys tend to be more physical when they do their bullying.
But the way you wrote this, and did Eckhart Tolle also write, or did he imbue it with his consciousness? Is that more what he did?
No, he wrote. He wrote some scenes, and he put the cat in, Snuggles the cat. I'm not a cat person. I'm more of a dog person. And he had a brilliant idea to let the cat be demonstrative of living in the now, because most animals do live in the now.
Yeah.
Which is not to say you forget about your past, otherwise you might burn your hand on a hot stove. You've got to remember stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea is to not let the past control your present and produce fear of the future. And in order to do that, you have to get to a little bit higher level of awareness, a little bit above the ego, where you can see your stream of consciousness and your thoughts, but you're not, run by them or controlled by them.
But it was a big challenge for Milton when he was attacked by the bully. Remember, he at the beginning, what I loved is he was very happy and da-da-da-da-da and doing his school and so on. And then this boy attacked him for his name, right? Milton's a weird name. You're a weirdo and so on, the big class bully. Boy, that took me back. I'll tell you what, talk about living out of the now and into the past. I can remember situations like that. But that was the crux of the issue, that at his age, he could learn. Well, maybe you want to recap the story.
Well, no, you can. Go ahead.
Well, it just seemed interesting how you brought in Snuggles the cat, and the cat was bullied by a dog one night.
Well, it actually attacked by a dog and hurt.
Yes, hurt badly.
And,
yeah,
and the fact that he was laying on, a short time later after he got, you know, taken care of, he's laying on Milton's lap purring. And Milton's grandfather, who happens to be visiting the house at the time, is there, and he uses that to say, you know, Milton asked him, well, why is Snuggles so happy? He just got, you know, viciously attacked by this Doberman pincher. And his grandfather uses that moment to point out one of the lessons, which is that, you know, this cat lives in the now. He's not going to sit there and recapitulate that battle and then worry about, you know, what's going to happen next week. So he's sitting there happy, he's warm, and he's purring. And so that was one of the illustrations his grandfather used to teach him.
Yeah. Another interesting thing is the way the dog who attacked him was described as the great Rottweiler, wasn't it? That was down the road that had not been well trained. I thought that was quite good, too.
Yeah, he wasn't well trained.
There's a lot of like little learning curves here, or big learning curves. I guess the question could be, how do you really infuse a child with this kind of understanding? And he had to have object lessons, didn't he? And when he had his dreams, his nightmares and his dreams, and he met the woman he and his dad often went to the ice cream shop after dinner to have a sundae. So in his dream, when he met a very conscious being in the, I think, an ice cream shop in his dream, who taught him about the light inside of the now. One of the things I really loved about that was that when she talked to him, his body was buzzing, was electrical, wasn't it?
Yes. It says in the book, I don't want to give away too much here because you're going to have to go out and buy this thing. But,
it's not a thing. It's a wonderful book. It's very beautiful.
But in any case, it says in the book that his grandfather had taught him about the outside of the now, and the woman in his dream, who happened to be the ice cream lady who served him his sundaes, taught him about the inside of the now by showing him the light. And he did that through his dream. Because in reality she wouldn't be aware of doing that.
But I do love that we get so many messages through synchronicities or through dreams as it is. And so to me it was a very strong message. And in the dream she looks very magical, doesn't she?
Yes, and of course she is. I mean, she's kind of a representative of his angels or his guides or his higher self, kind of teaching him a lesson, because he had some nightmares before that where he's living in fear of Carter, you know, doing it again or coming after him again.
And the pictures, I have to tell everybody that the pictures, the illustrations are just perfect, aren't they? They're just very expanding and really take you in. So he's having nightmares and you really can feel them as you look at those pictures. This is a wonderful illustrator, isn't he?
Yes, we were very fortunate that his name is Frank Riccio. And he actually lives here in Charlottesville, right near our office. And we had published a book of his earlier, some years earlier, and we knew he had some talent. And in, I think, 1998 or 99, we put out The Little Soul and the Sun by Neil Donald Walsh, the author of Conversations with God books.
You know, I fought those books. They're wonderful.
And Neil did a kind of a nationwide search for an illustrator at the time and wound up picking Frank.
Hmm.
It was right here in our backyard.
Hmm.
I had suggested him and, you know, sent him some samples, and he'd gotten them from other people around the country, too. And he basically decided that Frank was the guy.
Well, and the illustrations really bring the whole experience to life, and he's done a wonderful job with that as well.
He's a very spiritual man himself, and understands the principles, which is really helpful.
And I know you don't want to give away the whole story, but I'm going to talk about it because I want to recommend to people to buy this book. It's called Milton's Secret. And it's beautiful. And, you know, I read it to my 4-year-old grandson. And like I was telling Bob earlier, I don't know if he absolutely understood it, but he was not restless. He sat very, and he can tend to be restless if he doesn't like something. And he sat very still between all the way through the whole book and really paid attention. So I think it's penetrating his awareness, you know. So I'd say 4 years old isn't too young to actually experience this book. It's probably better for somebody a bit older.
Yeah, we actually say 4 to 8 is the range that I think the book is really meant for, but I always say 4 to 80.
I love it.
I think adults can get a lot out of it as well. And we've had some feedback on that already about people who said, yeah, that really taught me a lesson.
Yeah, and it's a beautiful lesson because, for me, what I loved is that when he talks about the now and then the light within the now, is that how we put it? The inside of the now. And he talked about feeling that light buzz in him, and he got it in his dream, and he was able to replicate it in his physical and his time, you know, in real time, if that's real. And I love that because I'm an energy person, and if you can get that awareness to light up in people, boy, they can replicate it beautifully, can't they? They can do a lot of healing with that.
Mm-hmm. Well, Eckhart talks about the source, or he doesn't use God in his books, but he talks about a higher source and a presence, and that is the level that you can get to get into the now.
Mm.
And a lot of that came from his own experience, because he was at one point in his life he was very depressed and had even contemplated suicide, and at the moment that he was thinking about it, the sentence passed through his ego mind, his consciousness, his stream of consciousness. The sentence passed through, it said, "I can't live with myself any longer."
Hmm.
And immediately he had this epiphany where, you know, he thought, "I, myself, there must be two of me here." And he started to, you know, think about it and contemplate it and meditate on it and write about it. And it kind of, he realized that, you know, there was a higher awareness as well as that ego mind. And it was the ego mind that was pulling him down into depression and allowing the, whatever had happened to him in the past to control what was happening in his present.
So who he was or his success or failure was a relative thing, was dependent on what, comparing, striving, futuristic thinking?
Yeah, I don't know the exact reasons why he was depressed or what had happened to him. Only that once that occurred, he actually, I think, lived on a park bench for about 6 months where he was, you know, in this, some people call it the zone, where you're just actually in the present and you're enjoying every moment and everything that happens and watching the trees and the flowers and the children. And you know, he did that for 6 months, and he could talk to people, they'd come over and talk to him, and he would tell them things that were just astounding.
Did he sleep out there as well?
Take care of them. Excuse me?
Did he sleep out there as well?
I don't think so. I think people would, you know, I think he had a little room somewhere, and people would take him back and or take him to their apartment and feed him. And, you know, he was just basically taken care of, you know, by people because they recognized that, not that he was crazy or something, but that there was something going on. And, he, you know, there was some kind of wisdom there that he was imparting to people. And he gradually came out of that and became a, you know, a teacher, kind of a spiritual teacher, and developed those skills. And he has become, he's probably one of the most influential spiritual teachers and counselors on the planet.
Yeah, that's true. Boy, that's amazing, isn't it? So he doesn't have children or anything. What about your metaphysical history? What's your experience? Were you awakened by the power of now, or were you already on a...
No, I had started reading back in the early 70s, and I read, you know, a lot about Edgar Cayce, and I read the Seth material, and I kind of was searching, you know, for something at the time, and something that made sense about, you know, the purpose of life and who you are and what's God and that sort of thing. A lot of people go through that, and
well, a lot of us never will finish, you know.
it's the journey that's important, not the destination, I've been told. So I had been, you know, involved in metaphysical publishing for, you know, over 30 years. So.
Oh, you have?
Yeah. I mean, my first company was not set up to be a New Age publisher or a metaphysical publisher, but I managed to sneak a few books in, you know, as we grew. And
You didn't publish the Celestine Prophecy, eh?
No, I wish I had, but and that was actually self-published.
Yeah, and that one went like wildfire, didn't it?
Well, I think James had sold about 70,000 copies, you know, basically out of the trunk of his car. He drove around the country and would get the books into the stores, you know, personally. He'd just drive into town, go into the New Age store, sell them some books, or give them to them when consigned or anything, just to get them out there. Not everybody has the resources or the time to do that, but he got it out there, and when it got to the point where the word of mouth had carried it to around 70,000 copies, Warner picked it up and turned it into a 5 million copy seller.
And talking about paradigm shifting, that one really cracked into the kind of the mental fabric of a lot of people, didn't it? It opened many people's minds.
It did, and you know, the publishers probably still couldn't understand why. You know, it's a weird phenomenon that for some books have this, you know, life destiny of their own, and there's nothing you can do about it. It's just going to happen.
You just got to pave the road. Well, the power of now has done a great deal of that, just keeping growing in through all kinds of groups of people.
It did. It had sold a couple of million copies before Oprah picked his second major book, A New Earth, as her book club selection last January. And that's what really took off. That was the fastest selling book club selection she had in her entire history.
Wow.
And at the height of it was the fastest selling book that Penguin Putnam had ever published in their history.
Oh my.
And it was, of course, number one New York Times and Barnes & Noble and Borders. And it was just a huge, huge seller. I think they've sold 10 million copies of both books since that book club selection.
That's great.
And then he was on a live webcast with Oprah for 10 weeks. They did an hour and a half each Monday night for 10 weeks. It's archived on her site, by the way, Oprah.com. Mm-hmm. If you want to look at it, it's really wonderful. Hmm. It's kind of an interactive webcast. You know, people would call in over Skype and or fax or email questions, and they had little places set up. They had cameras set up at Borders bookstore somewhere in Chicago or whatever, and people would get up to the mic and ask questions, and it was live, and he would answer them right on the air.
That's just wonderful.
He and Oprah were there at the desk and talking. It was a phenomenal event and a series of events, and that's really what set the sales off almost as much as the book club selection, I think.
Well, tell me this, as a publisher, do you find that there is more, you know, the market expresses something about the collective, doesn't it? Do you find that there's more and more philosophical or how-to or spiritual books? Are they picking up in terms of popularity or effectiveness?
I think they're going more and more mainstream.
Oh, you think they're going
like,
mainstream?
You know, Deepak Chopra and Wayne Dyer. And Neil Donald Walsh, I mean, they're really going mainstream, and they're reaching a much broader market. And I think...
Does this mean we're evolving?
Excuse me?
Does this mean we're evolving?
I don't know. I'm not qualified to, you know, answer that question. That's, as Barack Obama said, that's above my pay grade. But I do think that there's more interest in the area of, you know, who am I and what are we and is everything that we've been taught right, you know, that kind of thing.
Well, what were you going to say about Shirley MacLaine when I interrupted you?
I said, back in 87 when they did Out on the Limb as a television miniseries, that kind of opened the door for a lot of things. It broadened the New Age book section almost overnight, because so many millions of people had seen that on primetime television, and Shirley MacLaine is obviously a major celebrity.
I read her latest book as well, which is wonderful. It sort of encapsulates, it's quite simply written and so on, and yet it encapsulates so many aspects of this search that many of us have been on for years, and it's really a popular book too.
Yeah, she's maintained her popularity, although back then they told her career was finished, she was done. Bring all this stuff out about reincarnation and out-of-body experiences and Edgar Casey and channeling and mediumship and, you know.
But how can you keep them down on the farm now that they've seen Paris?
Right.
She just kept growing, that girl. But back to you and Hampton Roads. Do you handle a lot of metaphysical books, or do you have a broad spectrum, or what?
Well, we publish mostly in the metaphysical and spiritual area.
Mm-hmm.
But we've done fiction related to that and children's books related to that, and we've done even, you know, health books. We have a whole series of health books that are basically oriented toward alternative medicine. And but that's been our primary focus. You know, that's our niche.
Well, what are some other books? I mean, I love this book. I'm going to say the name again, Milton's Secret. It's so wonderful how he discovers his own inner light and inner power, what you finally call the inside of the now, or Eckhart Tolle calls the inside of the now. It's precious. It's really strengthening to read this book, even as an adult. But what are some other books that are children's books? I'm very interested in how we could help children be empowered by who they really are at a much younger age, but the system doesn't seem to do that yet. Now, these books,
yeah, it's not an easy task. But, you know, for many years we would always hear that from the New Age booksellers that they can't sell children's books very well.
I don't understand that.
There are not that many people who are publishers who do children's books in that, in, you know, the New Age kind of realm. And we did a whole line of them back in the late 90s and early 2000s. We called it the Young Spirit line.
Are they going well, or did they go well?
Well, some of them did okay, but they were basically the ones that, you know, were by authors who had already established a name or a following.
Sort of like Neil Donald Walsh.
Neil Donald Walsh's Little Soul in the Sun. It did extremely well because he was a you know, he'd sold 5 million books. So,
and what was really interesting is people I knew were terrifically excited because he now had a children's book they could take to their children, you know. And I feel that's true about this book with Eckhart Tolle and you.
Yes, I mean, that's obviously why we published it, but it gets a little complicated, and we've never really known why that people who are, you know, into the so-called New Age principles and beliefs never bought books for their children to teach them that. And, you know, a few weeks ago I had a conversation with another radio, internet radio host, and he pointed out something which I thought was right, and I've never really even thought of that, until then. But he said something about, you know, when you have young children, there's a lot of pressure to raise them in some kind of an organized religion, even if you don't believe it anymore, or you're not a regular participant yourself.
I mean, to give them training, philosophical?
To give them some sort of structure or, you know, belief system. You know, there's a lot of pressure from family and grandparents and you know, brothers and sisters and whatever. You know, what? You're not taking them to church, or you're not taking them to synagogue?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah, the fear is always that you're not giving them what they're going to need to be okay, right?
Right, exactly. And then there's always the thing, well, you know, what if they're right, you know? You don't want to send them to hell, or, you know, whatever your belief system is.
Mm-hmm.
You figure, well, when they get older, they can, you know, figure it out for themselves. So what's really sad about it is that, you know, you don't have to give up your religion, I mean, to become
empowered. Yeah,
spiritual, so-called spiritual person. You know, you see a lot of these things on, on the singles dating sites. You know, they describe them under religion. They say spiritual but not religious, you know. It seems pretty common that, you know, that kind of phrase.
I think of it as a trend toward emerging from belief cocoons, you know?
Right. And, you know, Neil, who was raised a Catholic, has never said, you know, his concept of God in conversations with God is a non-judgmental, non-punishing God, and that is certainly not the Old Testament God.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and a lot of people have difficulty accepting that, and, you know, he says, I'm not trying to make you believe in my kind of God.
Mm-hmm.
Just read what's here, and if it resonates with you, fine. And if it doesn't, fine. You know, he's never been one to, you know, proselytize or try to say, well, this is right and that's wrong, because that's not what it's about.
And just as an aside, I found the movie Conversations with God was not a great movie at all. However, it had a deep impact on me because his light was so, you know what I mean? It's not a really high quality film as films go.
Well, it was a very low budget. It was a $3 million budget.
But it really did the job.
I thought it was a very good film, actually.
Yeah, and I thought it gave him, his light came through really well, and his honesty. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah. I thought there was a really powerful line in there, which the actor who played Neil, his name Henry Zerny.
Mm-hmm.
He's a very fine actor. He's been in lots of films. People would probably recognize his face, if not his name. He's what they call a B actor, you know. He's not a star, but he's in a lot of films and he's very good. But the line that he said, this woman came up to Neil in a bookstore and after a signing and said, you know, ask him one of those questions, like she says to him, if God could say one thing to everybody on the planet, what would he say? And you see Henry Zerny, the actor's kind of taken aback a little bit. You know, he has to think about that for a second. But then he says, you got me all wrong.
Oh, that's so good. I don't remember that. But I do remember loving the show. It was really good, the movie.
You got me all wrong.
Yeah.
I'm not judgmental. I'm not punishing.
Right. We just
that
do
that. Kind of thing. But,
now, tell me this, Bob, jumping around a little bit. Your children, what have you done metaphysically or spiritually with your children? Or can I ask you that question?
Well, we didn't raise my kids. I've actually had two marriages, two sets of kids. The first set, my wife and I were both raised Jewish, and we actually asked them what they wanted to do when they got a little bit older. And because we didn't, you know, we weren't religious, you know, we didn't necessarily believe it. We believe some of it. We you know, we respected the culture and the people and the tradition and the history and did all, you know, all that. But we weren't religious, and, you know, we felt that we were being hypocritical if we forced them to be, you know, to accept that. And so we asked them, and they said they didn't want to go to synagogue. So we let them not go.
Are any of them metaphysicians? Of any level, you know.
I'd call them spiritual but not religious.
Okay.
Although, I don't know what they'd call themselves.
What do they think of this book?
Milton's Secret.
Yes.
I think they like it. I mean, you know, they're in their 30s, so it's... And then neither one of them are married or have children at this point, so...
So they're not really concerned about the children of the day?
No, it's not one of their priorities at the moment.
So can you list off any other books? I love Milton's Secret. I'd love to get 5 or 6 books to have here in the grandmother's supply, you know, for my grandest... I call him my grandest boy.
You mean other books that we've published?
Yeah, or I guess if you haven't, that you could recommend or that you understand. Or
well, there's a wonderful publisher out of Washington State. I think I mentioned earlier, isn't it? John Thompson with Illumination Arts, and they do a lots of. I think they have a line of maybe 50 children's books.
And metaphysical books. Or just all kinds?
Yeah, they're metaphysical and kind of new agey. And we've done a bunch, but not, you know, not that many. We have some wonderful books, I think. But I'm not sure they're available, you know, anymore.
Mm-hmm.
They might be on Amazon. You might be able to find some copies.
Yeah, I went hunting a while back when I first was waiting for your book to arrive, and I didn't find very many online anywhere that were suitable of this quality, this nature, this impact on children. And, you know, we were talking about how it's becoming more mainstream for people to learn about self-empowerment, you know, and the power of now is very common talk now, right? So it seems like the children's books are probably hovering right in there to join right into the mainstream. I'm just concerned about... I am. I used to teach school many, many years ago. I'm too weird to be in the system very long. But I really am fascinated by children and how when they awaken young, my, they can fly a lot farther and faster than we did, you know?
Yeah, I think hopefully they'll have the chance.
And the awakening isn't, to me, a religious thing. It's about self. Like, Milton is so much more self-empowered by the end of this book. And that's such a delight, isn't it? And he's being able to be in the now. Boy, it took me 100 years to learn about that. I'm not even good at it yet.
Well, we do have some other books that, you know, that are wonderful. And actually by pretty well-known writers. We've got a book called All for the Best, The Secret of Happiness by Hans Wilhelm, who's a pretty famous writer. And Dream House by Fuding Chang, which is a wonderful book. And
And these are for children as well?
Yes, they're children's books. Mm-hmm. And we've done quite a few, actually, over the years.
And your publishing company is called?
Hampton Roads.
Mm-hmm. And it can, and you've got a an online presentation.
Yeah, it's hrpub.com.
hrpub.com, that's easy, isn't it?
hrpub.com or hamptonroadspub.com. Either way will get you there. But
so what do you think about the publishing business? Like, what would you be doing and what would you be into in the future? Do you daydream about that?
Well, I still want to publish. I'm still here and I'm still working. But I want to get, I think, more involved in the film area. In fact, Milton's Secret has been optioned for a live-action film.
Oh, yay! I mean, animated or?
It's going to actually be live-action, live actors. It's a film that would go straight to DVD and make show on cable.
Oh, wow.
But it's not a theatrical film. It's not probably not going to be in the theaters. You know, it's a fairly low budget, but it's made for this particular market that's emerging now for of DVDs that are sold in the Targets and Walmarts and, you know, for kids.
Mm-hmm. And that makes sense because kids are so visual. I mean, they're so used to the technical media style of reading, learning.
Right.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it's a fairly, you know, low budget. It's like $1.5 million budget, but for that, you can make a very, very nice film if you're not, you know, using Tom Cruise or somebody.
There's a lot of actors and actresses that just haven't made the big time or that are really good, aren't there?
Well, yes, there are some wonderful people out there. And it's being produced by a friend of mine, actually, who is his name is Barnett Bain, and he was co-producer of a wonderful film some years ago called it was a film with Robin Williams, What Dreams May Come.
Yeah.
I've heard about that.
And I've heard of him.
Barnett?
Yes, I think because of something that was said at a Lazarus conference one time. He sometimes studies with Lazarus.
Right. He was he's a kind of a Lazarus fan.
Yeah. Well, that's great to know that he would be doing this one.
Yes, he's going to be the producer.
I heard something good about him, but I don't remember because it was a long time ago, but I know I remember his name. And I think it's great to get a lot of these visuals out there.
Yeah, we're going to do a whole series, I think. If the first one does well, they'll continue Milton for more of the story. And we're going to hopefully do more books with Milton.
And, you're going to do a series of books with Milton?
Yeah, we've already written a good part of the second book. And
you and Eckhart Tolle?
No, at this point it's just me, and I think he's just seen it. It's the very early stages at this point. You know, he may want to wait and see how this book does before we continue going. I don't know. We're not sure yet.
It seems to me, Bob, that you're emerging as a writer again after all these years.
Well, it's possible. We'll see where it goes. It's not one, you know, it's not something I ever envisioned. You know, I always figured I'd just be a publisher and kind of ease on out in that direction, but life kind of intervened, you know.
Well, life is kind of a rich mixture when it comes to fueling our creativity. As we get a little bit older, we got some brand new creative urges, don't we?
Yeah. You know, I've always written some poetry along the years and a couple of stories here and there and a whole lot of copy, you know, one way or another, describing books and stuff.
Wow. I just, as an intuitive, I look at you and I go, boy, you're going to be doing some pretty interesting things in a while yourself, and that's going to make you quite happy, I think.
I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, it looks like something, and I would say scripts, which you already know, but some kind of ideas are going to perk with you, and the world will be a better place as a result, you know? I don't know if you're going to stick with kids' things, but I think you've got something for teenagers or adolescents of some sort.
Yeah, we've published some books in that area, too.
Hmm.
A few.
I really love the film of The Peaceful Warrior. They did a great job on that. And I know
I saw that the other night. I had never seen that film.
What'd you think?
I thought it was very good. It wasn't a commercial success for whatever reasons. You never know with films. But you can look it up and, see how much money it made and that kind of thing.
But I found that when it first came out, we rushed off to see it. And I found it was very engaging, where I felt, after all my years of metaphysical study and so on, I went, I want to live like that. And I went, well, you are trying to. But it was inspiring in the sense that you really could identify with it and really want to evolve that way. So that
it had the same message, by the way, that Eckhart says. He was trying to learn to be in the now when he was doing his his routines in the gymnastic area.
Yeah, and doing his healing, right?
And with his healing, yeah.
Yeah. I really think that this is going to be a wonderful movie, this Milton's Secret. And more and more, I really think you're going to get more and more into the visual world anyway. Maybe we all are, huh?
Well, I think it's the way you have to go, because certainly the younger generation is totally visually oriented, with television and DVDs and iPhones and, everything.
And everything's so fast. I mean, you can make your own movie in a heartbeat and send it to your friend by phone. I mean, that's pretty fast stuff, isn't it?
Yeah. Most of them show up on YouTube.
I know. I mean, it's really easy for people to do that. Anyway, I really appreciate your time, and I truly, really recommend people to consider Milton's Secret in somebody's Christmas packages or Hanukkah or whatever is the gifting part of this time of year. It'd be a wonderful gift for many, for families, actually. It doesn't have to be just the kids, does it?
No.
And so how
I think it's for everybody.
How do people order it? We've already talked about your website. Do they order it from the website or from Amazon?
They can get it off our website, but it's also available just about everywhere. It's in Barnes & Noble and Borders and Amazon and just about everywhere books are sold.
So
they can either be there or they can get it for you if it's not there.
So it's called Milton's Secret, and a wonderful picture on the front with Enter Now, a sign on the door, and it's by Eckhart Tolle and Robert S. Friedman of Hampton Roads Publishing. I really enjoyed talking to you, and I wish you the best with the sales, but also I want to say I appreciate so much that you're impacting the collective with some wisdom like this.
Well, thank you for having me. It's been a fun conversation, and hopefully it's been enlightening for a few people out there.
And thank you so much. Have a great season.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye now. So that was Robert Friedman, and let's consider that pretty soon I'm going to have a variety of people on who have some kind of focus on helping children become conscious younger. So this is a turning point time, a turning point season. I call it the season of rebirth. And with my guides and angels, my higher self, your higher selves, with Bob, my wonderful partner, and his higher self, and all of our guides and angels, let's join each other and just send this amazing love and streams of light all around the world and back, that we can all share in the evolutionary force of love, the expansive force of being in the now and being in love. Email me if you have any suggestions for this show or if you'd like a session with me, Veronica Entwistle. I'm an intuitive and energy counselor. My email is veronica@veronicaentwistle.com. There's no H in Entwistle. veronica@veronicaentwistle.com. And one more time, blessings of the season for you and for all of us. Thank you for listening.